hopefully fresh language, fresh perspective on not only what to say, how to say it, what your frame of mind should be, and then also some ways to connect with people electronically and through potentially the mail, right? So we'll be doing some old-style marketing and new-style marketing mixed together to hopefully come up with something effective and new for you. Just some housekeeping before we get started. These sessions are, we're going to be going today and tomorrow. Tomorrow's session is 1 hour earlier, so it'll be at 12 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific. We'll go about 60 to 75 minutes, depending on how fast I get through the content, and then we'll have maybe 10 minutes for Q&A at the end. And with Q&A, I never know. Sometimes we get zero questions. Sometimes we get way too many questions to answer. And there's no way for me to predict that. So depending on how many we get, we may or may not get to every question, but we'll definitely sift through and make sure that we answer the ones that come up the most. So if you have a question, you can post that through the webcast page, and I'll do my best to get to that at the end. One thing to be aware of, you will get the filled-in version of the outline at the end of the course tomorrow. So what I would suggest is that you don't multitask while you're on this call. If you've printed out the outline, you can fill in the outline as you go through. There's some research about kinesthetic learning or involving kinesthesia, you know, movement in your learning. You will retain the information better if you take notes by hand. You can do it either way, but the printout is something where you can just fill in the blanks. It's very easy to do, and it will help you with retention. But don't worry about it if you miss something, because you're going to get the filled-in version at the end. If you are on the webcast page and you, for some reason, get knocked off your internet, when you log back on, just make sure you hit refresh, which is going to bring you back to the updated audio right where we are. Okay, so that's just if you have some connectivity issue, just be sure to hit refresh. And let me get to our first slide here as we go through some housekeeping. For those of you who are joining, welcome to today's session. This is Get Searches Now. We'll be going today and tomorrow and jumping in with the content in just a minute. You should see on your screen an introduction, which is what I'm kind of covering now. And one thing is that you all are qualified for the free roundtable membership. And since this topic is marketing, I just want to remind you, there is a ton of marketing material in the Roundtable members area. There are lots of audios specifically on marketing, electronic marketing, social media marketing, that is inside the members area that you have access to at no charge for 30 days. That's a trial membership. And there's also videos, a whole video library on marketing as well. So if you haven't taken advantage of that free membership, you'll see a link on the page you're on right now, if you're on the webcast page, to figure out how to get the access to the members area. One thing that I want you to think about before we jump into the content is the idea of an experimental life, an experimental attitude. The idea is that if you view everything as an experiment, it allows you to try things on without feeling there's a lot of consequence. Right, so it keeps you with that beginner's mind and allows you to try out new things. Because if you've been doing this business a while, what you're going to be looking for is refinements. And the refinements sometimes make all the difference. Right, so this may not be totally different content than what you've heard before, but it may land differently for you if you keep that open mind, if you keep that beginner's mind. And that's you know, the four most dangerous words related to that. The four most dangerous words when you're on a training is, or are, I already know that. I already know that. What that does is it stops you from learning. And as I mentioned, sometimes you reach a tipping point with small distinctions. So make sure you keep an open mind in how this can be applied on your desk. And I will tell you, today is divided up into three parts, or this course is divided up into three parts. The first part, we're going to talk about language, right? So word tracks, specifically what you might say in various scenarios, including objections. The second part is, how do you get leads from other people? how do you get other people to act as your paid or unpaid lead generation system? And so I'll go through a couple of methods for doing that. And then the last thing is looking at some of those bonus reports on the emails that you might send in order to introduce the idea of scheduling an appointment and also the introduction letter that you might use for that point. Those we'll get to tomorrow. So that's a little bit of background. You can see what we're going to cover in the over the course of the next 2 days on the first slide there. But I want to start off with the results of some research that was conducted at the MIT Media Lab. And the research was done on the subject of persuasiveness. And what they concluded was that they could predict the outcome of telephone sales calls with 87% accuracy without listening to a single word of content. So I'm going to repeat that because I really want this to land and for you to get this. Researchers concluded that they could predict the outcome of telephone sales calls with 87% accuracy without listening to a single word of content. So how did they do that? Well, they were analyzing the voice fluctuations, the percentage of time talking, the body language of the person, the salesperson, who was doing the pitching. So if you think about that, when I first heard that, it's a staggering statistic. And what it implies is that the words that we use when making a marketing pitch are far less important than how you sound when you deliver them. And ironically, the effectiveness of using scripts or word tracks may have very little to do with the actual words that you use. Their effectiveness might be the result of the increased sense of ease and calm that you have when you make the call. Because there is something other than the words you use that is determining your success. And to illustrate this, I want to ask you to imagine something. Imagine that I asked you to walk across a plank of wood. And the plank of wood is 6 inches thick, 6 inches wide, and 6 feet long. Okay, so it's a 6 foot long plank of wood. And it's suspended 1 foot off the ground. How confident are you that you could easily walk across it? Now imagine walking across the exact same plank of wood, except instead of it being suspended 1 foot off the ground, it's now suspended 1,000 feet off the ground. What has happened to your confidence level in your ability to walk across a 6 foot plank of wood? Most likely, you're going to trigger your sympathetic nervous system. You're going to be in a state of hyperarousal. And this, the better known name for this is flight, fight, or freeze response. Your threat system kicks in, and when your threat system kicks in, it shuts down critical thinking and creativity, contextual thinking, a whole bunch of things that you would need if you were doing something, let's say, like making a presentation, but not if you were fighting off a tiger, right? Not if you were struggling for your life. So if you have this same threat system kick in when you make a pitch or a presentation, whether it's in person or over the phone, if you feel that heightened sense of intensity because maybe you're interrupting someone's day, you think they don't want to really listen to you, they don't need your services, you're not sure how to differentiate yourself, if you go into that state of hyperarousal, it's going to do something to your ability to think creatively. You ever get you get dumb when you're talking to someone who makes you nervous and you don't understand why you sound so dumb when you're talking to them? It's because your arousal system has kicked in, you're being flooded with cortisol, and it's shutting down your creativity and your contextual thinking and your critical thinking. So you do sound dumb because you don't need those things, like I said, to fight off a tiger. But of course you do need them when you're making a presentation. And so if you think about it, why would someone march into a marketing presentation or a marketing call where failure is the norm, where seconds count, where preparation matters? Why would you walk into that and wing it? The idea here of what we're talking about today is the ability that you'll have to prepare to improvise. You're going to need the confidence to improvise when you're on the phone, right? You know that. But the preparation is going to allow you to be in that state of ease. And remember, researchers can predict the outcome just by things having nothing to do with the words you use. And what I would suggest to you is that is your confidence, your feeling of ease, your belief in yourself, your belief in what you're doing. And a lot of that can come by having the right mindset and the right language that you believe in. That's the idea. What else? I think we will just dig into some of the material here. As I mentioned, you can see what we're going to cover today, how to diffuse the pressure of an initial sales call. We're going to talk about permission marketing, which is a script that I'm going to go through with you. We're going to talk about how to handle common objections. We're going to talk about getting other people to create leads for you through strategic alliances and referrals. And then we'll talk about using candidates as part of your sales force, getting search leads from them. So let's go on to the first topic, which is how to diffuse the pressure in a sales conversation. Call me on Friday. You need to talk to Susan in Human Resources. Send me some information. I'm guessing those sound familiar to you if you have conversations with prospects. And aside from someone, let's say, not having any openings, what would be the common reason that someone would give you those responses? And the answer is, unfortunately, it's become socially acceptable to lie to recruiters on the phone, right? Whether or not you have an opening, you say you don't. Whether you have time to talk or not, you say you don't. And the reason for that is that, of course, it could be true, right? They could have no openings. But the reason that people will say, let's say, call me next week, is that they don't want to deal with salespeople who are going to make them feel pressured, right? It's the pressure or the sense that you're going to waste their time that makes them resistant. Everybody hates feeling pressured. So the idea is that if you can convince them that you're not going to pressure them, that there isn't the need for them to hang up quickly, then maybe you can uncover the truth as to whether or not you can actually help them, right? So the part of what I'm going to talk to you about is the mindset that you're going to have internally, which is then going to translate in how you communicate and how you sound. If the prospect doesn't feel pressured, he or she then can open up to you. They can tell you the truth about what's going on in their department, the prognosis for the next 6 months, whether they're going to need help finding positions, who maybe they're thinking about firing. You may not find that out on the first call with a stranger, but you can get a better sense of it if you can get them to trust you a little bit. So if you look at letter B on your outline under number one, it starts with your mindset about what you're trying to accomplish on that call. And it says there, the end objective of the call is not to get a search assignment or job order. It is to get to the truth as to whether or not it is in their interest to work with you early in the process. So keep in mind, this is your intention. This is not something you're going to ever communicate to them. But if you think about it, if you worked for me and I said to you, your job is to get a search assignment on every single marketing call. Go get them, you know, have at it. How much pressure would you feel if that was your stated goal every time you make a call? And how much pressure do you think the person on the other end would feel from you if that was your objective? Whereas if I said to you, you're my new employee, and I said, look, you don't need to get a job order on any of these calls. Your job is to uncover the truth as to whether or not it is in this person's interest to work with you and to figure that out as early as you can in the process. Go figure that out. Instead of being a pushy salesperson, you've turned into a private investigator, someone who's curious, someone who's going to ask questions, someone who maybe cares about the other person. So that caring and curiosity is going to come through in the same way the pushiness will come through. So this is your mindset at the beginning. And this, I would not skip over this because this makes a tremendous difference. That's why I mentioned that statistic at the beginning. There's a whole other course I teach on why it is that researchers can predict the outcome of sales calls. And it's body language, breathing, a whole bunch of other things. And in fact, if you're in the roundtable program, I think 2 months from now, I'm going to deliver that course in the roundtable. It's called the Charismatic Recruiter. So that would be included for those of you who took advantage of the free membership. But just know that that's what's going on. There's other things going on that you can't control with your breath, your body language, your pace, the way you talk, micro fluctuations, et cetera. They can pick up on it unconsciously. So how do you diffuse that pressure on you and them? You'll see letter C as an example of what you might say. Okay, so I want to let you know I'm not calling to see if you need my help in filling any current openings. My guess is that you're getting a daily barrage of calls from recruiters wanting to fill your vacancies. Is that a fair assessment? So if you don't like that language, you can tweak it to whatever you want. Basically, what it is a softening statement. It's an empathy statement. It's an understanding of what might be happening from their point of view. So you can tweak the words however you want, but it's a softener. Okay, so you're softening things a little bit. You're empathizing with them. And I can tell you from experience, I've used that or something very similar to that for years. And the reaction that is the best reaction is, oh, yeah. When somebody says, oh, yeah, that means they felt understood by me. That means they are seeing me differently than the other recruiters. And that is a reaction that you can get if someone is actually listening. And to me, that's a good reaction because now we've both become human in this conversation and I have a chance to actually learn what's going on with them. So if we continue along, here are some of the steps that you can use for creating that feeling of openness to allow them to start to talk to you. So number one, sense and diffuse any pressure the client may feel by addressing it directly. And I just gave you an example of how that might sound. But mostly it's going to be your intent that they're going to pick up on, right? So an example of that, you know, the purpose of this call is to explore whether or not I can help you to improve the quality of your staff, not to sell you something you don't need or to put any pressure on you, okay? Again, if you don't like the exact wording, you can tweak it however you want, but it's one way to put in a softener. Now, you might say somebody would hear that and think, well, that's BS. He is calling me to sell me, or he is calling me to get a job order. That's why that intent, the purpose of the call from my point of view, is to uncover the truth as to whether or not there's an opportunity for me to help this person. If that's really my intent, then I can be in alignment with that statement. Then it's, again, going to come out naturally. Number two, let them know that you may or may not be the person who can help them, but that you'd like to open a dialogue to find out. This is honest. And it's so funny because I do a lot of, or maybe not a lot, but I do a decent amount of private coaching with my clients. When we talk about marketing approaches or a lot of things, I end up saying often, just tell the truth. Just tell the truth. So many things in this business are so much easier if you just tell the truth. If you don't want to chase somebody, say, I don't want to chase you. If you don't want to sound like a pest, say, I don't want to sound like a pest. Just be honest. If you don't want to waste your time chasing them, say, I don't want to waste my time chasing you. It's okay to be honest like that, and it's refreshing for people, again, if it's rooted in authenticity. So, letting them know that you may or may not be the right person for them is hopefully an honest statement, but it's something that I do with every person who does, if we do a strategy session, which is an introductory session for someone who may or may not work with me in private consulting, I say that exact thing at the very beginning. We may not be a fit. I might not be right for you, and you might not be right for me, but we'll take the next 20 minutes to figure it out. I'm not going to close you at the end. This is just an exploratory conversation for both of us, and we'll figure it out together. I say that at the beginning, some version of that, of every single consultation. And from what I know is that's rooted in truth. And so it, I believe, comes across well to them as well. So think about those kinds of comments that you could use in conversations, and think of the contrast of that with someone who says, we're the best, we find the best people, we've been doing this long, you know, we're the top this, top that. There's a place for having pride in your credentials, for sure. But there's also a place for a bit of humility. And I will tell you that humility is going to get you further than the bragging, from my point of view. Number three, under letter D, is to ask questions to determine whether or not you can add value. And the idea here is you ask business questions first and sales questions second. That's something I learned from Peter Lefkowitz a long time ago. Okay, so I'm going to start off with business questions, such as what criteria do you use when selecting a search partner? Okay, that's one of my favorites. What criteria do you use when selecting a search partner? And contrast that versus do you have any openings? Right, so what criteria do you use when selecting a search partner is a business question. Do you have any openings is a sales question. And you have to get to the sales questions at some point, but you don't want to start off with those. You start off with the business questions. Number four, agree with their objections. Don't argue. Okay, agree with their objections. Don't argue. I'm going to give you a rebuttal that you can use for every single objection forever. Are you ready for it? The rebuttal is, that's not a problem. Okay, that's under number four. That's not a problem. Oh, you can already see it. That's number four. The idea here is you want to get underneath their resistance a little bit. And there's a Eastern proverb about, and I always butcher this, but something about the river gets, the river is mightier than the mountain. And the reason it's mightier than the mountain is because it gets lower than the mountain. And in the end, all of the water runs off the mountain and ends up in the river because it gets lower. Okay, so it's humble. So if you are able to respond with, that's not a problem, and I'll give you examples of how this actually works specifically as we go through this, but just know that's something that you can use every time, and I'll show you how to use that as we go through here. And then number five, get to the truth as to whether they have an interest early in the process. Don't chase them. Okay, so that's the goal. It can't always be accomplished on the first call or even the second call or the third call, but your goal is to make sure that you get to the truth as early as possible. And what's interesting about that goal for you to have for yourself, if you were, let's say, making marketing calls, and my goal is to uncover the truth as to whether or not I can be of service at this time. If someone hangs up on you, that was a successful call, right? So we go back to the intention in the beginning. I'm your manager. I say to you, your objective is a job order on every call. If someone hangs up on you, you failed. If, on the other hand, your objective is what I just mentioned, sorry, guys, I've got a giant spider in my office. Okay, I think he's gone. sorry about that. But if it's the second thing that I mentioned, which is to uncover the truth, and someone hangs up on you, then the reality is that was a successful call. You uncovered the truth. The truth is you can't help them because they hung up on you. Okay? So it's a little bit of a mind game, you might say, but it actually helps tremendously. So let's talk about the next idea, which is to approach sales calls from the side or from the peripheral. Okay? And as a metaphor, I like to use that if you wanted to feed a slice of bread to a squirrel, and let's say you had a loaf of bread, if you see a squirrel, if you run up to the squirrel with a loaf of bread, what does the squirrel do? It runs in the other direction, right? But what if you see the squirrel and you break off a piece of bread? And you take a few steps toward the squirrel, you put down the piece of bread, and then you step backwards, and you allow the squirrel to come and get that breadcrumb. And then you do it again, and you shrink the distance slightly. So you take another piece of bread, and you break it off, and you walk towards the squirrel a little bit, put down the bread, and then you back away. If you keep doing this, you can shorten the distance between you and the squirrel. And eventually, the squirrel would be eating out of your hand. So there's a concept called pink spoon marketing that I like to describe when we get to this section, because it helps to think about this squirrel analogy a little differently. So So Pink Spoon would be Baskin-Robbins, right? Everybody knows what the Pink Spoon is at Baskin-Robbins. That is the free sample spoon where they give you a little bit of ice cream on it. And they use that because it gets the customer to say yes to a proposition. And the proposition is, would you like a free spoonful of ice cream? And that's an easy thing to say yes to, right? They're not asking you to subscribe to their Flavor of the Month Club for $30 a month. They're not even asking you to buy a banana split. They're saying, would you like a free spoonful of ice cream, and you get to choose the flavor? That's a proposition that probably 90% of the people that walk in there are going to say yes to. And, of course, once you've tasted the ice cream, you're probably going to have more of the ice cream. And they know that. There's a concept called permission marketing that was, I think the term was coined by Seth Godin. He wrote a book called Permission Marketing. And the idea kind of dovetails with the squirrel and the pig spoon in that the traditional marketing formula, let's say 30 plus years ago, was you move from a stranger to a client. So in the first interaction, if I'm a salesperson, I'm trying to take a stranger from, you know, ground zero all the way to a signed client. But because things have gotten much more sped up, and because we're just inundated so much with marketing messages, spam, billboards, apps, things constantly beeping at us on our phone, advertisements of all kinds, social media, people are less likely to go from a stranger to a client, right? So what Seth talked about was this three-step formula instead of two steps. It's you move from a stranger to a friend, and then from a friend to a client. So what does it mean to make someone a friend? It means you gain a little bit of trust, just like you did with the squirrel and just like you do with the pink spoon at Baskin-Robbins, right? So I've got to build trust, and I can build that trust by getting their permission to work with them. And that's the idea first. I want to get their permission first, and then I can start to market to them. So I'm going to talk about a permission marketing script in just a second. The next thing you'll see under letter D, and this is number two, letter D, I just throw this in as a way to think about the complicated nature of marketing or the way it seems complicated. The idea there is you could never make another marketing call again ever if you decided that your approach would be that you're going to call prospects about their career prior to discussing their hiring needs. And I know a few people who've told me that they never make any marketing calls. They only make recruiting calls. And they work with people at a level that they're able to work with them either as a client or as a candidate. And that makes it really easy. Right? If they could be a client or a candidate, then it's really your choice what you call them about first. Even if you do want to work with them as a client, you could call them and talk to them about their career. Now, I wouldn't suggest doing this if there's no opportunity to help them and it's just a gimmick, but if it's something where you could potentially help them find their next career position, then there's nothing wrong with that. And I throw that out there not because I'm saying you should do that, but because that could be you could hang up right now, and that's just what you're going to do forever. Like, yep, got it. That's what I'm doing. There are people that I know who just pick one or two methods that they really like, and they market the heck out of them, and that's what they do. Okay, so it's just something to think about with some of the methods that I'll be talking about over the next 2 days. There might be something that just rings your bell, and you think that's what I'm going to do, and that's fine if it works. So that's one thing to think about. Sometimes people ask me, should I send an email first or should I call first? Should I call at all? Should I, should I be doing video? Is that what I should be doing? And my answer is you should do whatever gets results, right? So what I care about is the fact that you get results. I don't care about how you get them so much. So just keep that in mind, that it's not that you have to do anything one certain way. It's just that you need to test things. That's why I mentioned at the beginning that idea of the experimental life, right? You're going to run experiments, It's like the name of my company is the Recruiting Lab, a laboratory, a place where you try things out. That's the idea. So let's go on to some specifics. So the first one is the option script. The option script, I think, is probably the most honest approach you could possibly take. This, I think, I learned from Danny Cahill 20 years ago, although I don't know. It's in the industry so much now that I don't think I can know where that came from, but maybe Danny. But what I've always liked about it is this is one that goes under the category of evergreen scripts. So if you had a new employee and you said, here, use this and just do this and make, you know, 50 calls per day, they don't need to do any prep, and you don't need to do any prep whatsoever to make this call. So there's zero prep. One of the things we're not really talking about so much in this course is failure-proofing your own behavior with regards to marketing, right? Meaning making sure how you could actually follow through. Regardless of what your marketing plan is, how do you get yourself to actually take the action consistently, which is, as big of an issue for most people as knowing what to do. And one of the ways that you can reduce the resistance you might have is to have an evergreen approach that requires no work. So I said this is probably the most honest approach, and you just call up someone. The reason for my call, I wanted to see if I could support your career in one of two ways. Number one, when the time is right, I can help you to find a stronger position for yourself. And number two, I can help you to recruit talented people for your team and to upgrade the quality of your staff. Not sure if either is relevant at the moment, but wanted to explore this for a couple of minutes. What are your thoughts? That's something that goes over very well. I know another recruiter who tells me that this is the only thing that he does. He doesn't bother researching companies or doing much in the way of front-end work. He just gets a call list together and starts calling decision makers and using this. Okay, so that's one approach that I have used a lot. It's one of my favorites, and partly because I don't like having to do a ton of prep work. And I know the danger of doing a ton of prep work is you become an over-preparer. And often you are over-preparing to leave a voicemail, right? 80% of the time you're going to leave a voicemail. So you want to be careful not to over-prepare for leaving a voicemail. If you're doing this through email, then obviously that's a little different. We'll talk about email tomorrow. So this is one approach. The other one I mentioned before is the permission marketing script or the talent scout approach. And this one I'm going to go through in some detail. Okay, so some of the things that I've already mentioned or alluded to will be illustrated a little more deeply in this one. So number one, you can see there, address their discomfort. And this will look familiar to you. I wanted to let you know I'm not calling to see if you need my help in filling any current openings. My guess is you're getting a daily barrage of calls from recruiters wanting to fill your vacancies. Is that a fair assessment? Okay, and what I'm listening for there is a little bit of exhalation on their end. And then offer to be their talent scout. The reason for the call is I wanted to let you know about a complimentary talent scout service that we offer to a select group of companies. As you know, the best attorneys aren't always available when you happen to have an opening. So to keep our clients plugged into the talent pool, we send them a periodic email listing the best attorneys to surface as they become available. This gives them a first look at our top tier of candidates before we send them out on interviews. So I wanted to ask you if you'd like to receive a periodic email letting you know when we come across an attorney that we think is in the top 20% of their field. What are your thoughts? So what are they having to say yes to in this scenario? What they're having to say yes to is a highly relevant email telling them when the top 20% of the people that they care about become available in their city. And if you think about it, if you're really talking to a decision maker and you're having a real conversation, and those are big ifs, right? Could be that he's not listening, could be that he doesn't trust you, there's all that. But let's just say that you're having a real conversation with someone. They would be a moron to say no to that question, if you think about it. They believe you. They would be a moron to say no to that. And let me illustrate this for you. If you're an owner, this is going to make sense to you. If you're not an owner, pretend you're an owner for a moment. Okay, so pretend you are an owner of a search firm, and let's pretend you have four recruiters working for you. Okay, so you've got a small office with four recruiters, and you get a call from me, and I say, hi, this is Gary Stauffel, and I go through a similar introduction to what you see there, and I say, my job is to protect firm owners like yourself from hiring weak recruiters, and what I do is select out and sift through all the headhunters in the area, and I only work with those who are billing between 250,000 plus, right? 250,000 and up. And I wanted to ask you, would you be interested in knowing when a recruiter who I think is exceptional becomes available and is looking for a position in your area and who already is a profit center, is already billing 250 plus? And I'm not going to call you with that information. I'm just going to shoot you an email and let you know someone has become available. Would you like to receive an email letting you know that? Now, that was a little rough. I could have done a better job with that if I had planned a little more. But you get the idea, right? So even if you are a firm owner who says, I'm not really hiring right now, why would you say no to hearing about a profit center that could just come into your office? And the answer is you wouldn't. You would say yes to it. And the reason that that might land differently for you than when you read it on the screen here is that it applies to you, right? The language would be your language. So that's what you have to do when you use this talent scout approach. You have to make it their language. I just said here attorneys, right? You might say trial lawyers. You might say corporate tax attorneys. It might be whatever it is that you do. You're going to specify it, and you're going to speak the language in a way that they know you know what you're talking about. And then in the same way that you would be a fool not to say yes to receiving that information, it's the same with them. Okay, so the real task is getting them to trust you. And that's why I spent some time at the beginning talking about your mindset, your intention on the call, your approach that you're going to take, and then other things like breathing and body language, et cetera. Okay. So this was always my favorite approach myself, partly because I am lazy, but partly because it's such a low bar for them, right? So Baskin-Robbins, pink spoon of ice cream. In this case, super relevant to email. Nobody's calling you. It's just a super relevant email letting you know when the best talent is available. Very, very easy for them to say yes to. So what happens when they say yes to that? Let's assume that they say yes. And maybe it's not, they're not jumping out of their skin, but maybe they say, sure, sure, you can send me an email if somebody becomes available. Sure. Then you pivot and you say, great, so that I don't waste your time, can you give me a thumbnail sketch of the types of talent that you have the most difficulty in locating? So that question I call the million-dollar question, because that's the question that you always want to get to, whether you start with the option script, whether you start with a candidate that you're marketing, whether you start with the permission marketing script. Where you really want to get to is the same question that a doctor asks, which is, where does it hurt? Right? That's what you have to find out to be of service to them. Where does it hurt? But you need the other stuff to get to the where does it hurt question. And it's such an easy transition. If they say, yes, sure, you can send me an email letting me know when those people become available, you just pivot immediately to this question, and it's very organic and natural. Once they're answering that question, you're off and running. That's why I said the script is something that allows you to prepare to improvise. So now you're going to improvise the conversation, right? You're going to ask high-quality questions to uncover what's really going on with them, but you're off and running at that point. And then when you're sensing that the call, it should come to an end, you know, you can sense they're getting a little tired or get the sense that they want to get off the phone, you can ask the bonus question. Okay, and this is the one you might wrap up with. Are there any types of talent that you'd like me to keep an eye open for in the next 90 days? Are there any types of talent that you'd like me to keep an eye open for in the next 90 days? So this could be similar to, do you have any openings, which would be a sales question, but this feels more like a business question, right? This feels more like a forecasting question. I'm not using trigger words like open requisition that's going to trigger sort of a bureaucratic mindset on his part. You know, do I have permission? Do I have Can I really hire right now? I don't want them thinking that way. I just want to know, should I keep my eye open for anything? And that could include that he's planning to fire someone or he's hoping to fire someone, but he doesn't know yet, right? And I'm framing the request in 90 days because if you don't do that, it feels too open-ended for people and they just usually would just say no. Say in the next 90 days, they go, okay, let me think about that, right? And it just opens a dialogue that could lead to more information. That's kind of the first two approaches that I would suggest to you. Candidate marketing, obviously, is another approach. I'm not going to go into that. Most people know a lot about that. But these are two that I would suggest as ways to open a dialogue and how to frame the beginning part with the softener to get them to open up. But just keep in mind how you sound is more important than what you say. So you got to get yourself in a place of feeling confident and strong and authentic, right? Like you actually believe in your service. And I wish I had time to talk to you all about that stuff, but it's a different class. Let's talk about some of the objections that you might hear. Okay, so call me next week. Your job, as I've said, is to be sort of the proactive force in communication, right? Clear communication, if you can, with your prospects even. You don't know why somebody says, call me next week. It could be they really want you to call them next week, or it could be just a way to get rid of you. And so you want to be able to shift that a little bit. So here's your response. Okay, you could start off with the one I told you, which is that's not a problem. All right, so can you call me next week? Sure, that's not a problem. Can I share with you the way that we found to be the most effective for communicating with our clients? We operate on a calendar-driven system or schedule during each step of the process. That means that we schedule a 5-minute check-in phone call during each step. And this is so that I don't end up chasing you and you don't end up chasing me. You know, is this workable for you? Can we get something scheduled now for next week? So what you're saying is, you know, I don't want to just play phone tag. So let's schedule something. And this calendar-driven system, calendar-driven schedule, is something you can use with your, you should use with your new clients as well, right? So that's a whole other class as well, is how to actually get your clients set up in the beginning to where you're going to get timely feedback. You're going to get the respect that you need to do your job. So you might as well start that off when they're a prospect to say, let's pull out our calendars and schedule that now. Even if the client isn't open or the prospect isn't open to that idea, by you introducing the topic, first of all, you've set yourself apart from those who would just say, sure, I'll call you next week, right? But you may come to some other agreement about how you're going to communicate with each other, or you might get a clue that this person is just being flaky, right? Either way, that's good information for you. And if somebody is totally opposed to the idea, that's a red flag. The next one on there, you know, send me some information. Okay, send me your stuff. Okay, so here's your response. Sure, that's not a problem. We actually do some evaluation at the beginning of the process as well. And it's really to make sure that we're a fit for both sides. So we like to ask a few questions up front to make sure we're compatible. Can you give me an idea of what criteria you use when selecting a search partner? So I started off, I agreed with the objection. I said, sure, that's not a problem. Then I said, we like to do the same thing. I think evaluation is a great idea. And then I just asked a question that I was probably going to ask anyway. Now, the key here is to have those questions ready to go. What criteria do you use when selecting a search partner, right? So that's one way that you could respond to that. And it's that response is going to, once again, get you some information. Either the person just starts talking about what criteria they use when selecting a search partner, or they say, no, just send me your stuff, you know, in which case you kind of know what that means, right? Let's talk about you have to go through HR. This is probably one of your favorites. You have to go through human resources. And, you know, I should say just because HR is involved doesn't mean you have to be at odds with them. And as you probably know, HR can be an ally, right, depending on the situation. They're usually not, unfortunately, but they can be an ally. But the key here is you want to work with people who want it to happen as much as you do. Right? So I would put an asterisk by that. You want to work with people who want it to happen as much as you do. And you could really say a formula for being really, really successful in this business is to work with clients who want it to happen and to work with candidates who want it to happen. If you start off working with those people, the chances of you making a placement are already really, really high. If you start off with people who are holding their nose at the idea of even working with you, it's going to be tough. And there's a difference between holding their nose because they just don't want to pay a fee or they're just busy versus they really don't want to work with you, right? And, yeah, there's a lot we could dig into there. But let's just look at human resources. So a couple of responses. Once again, okay, that's not a problem. I'm happy to do that. Before I do, and this is assuming obviously you're talking to the hiring authority and he says you have to go through HR, right? Or she says you have to go through HR. I'm happy to do that. Before I do, I'd like to ask a quick question about the position so that I sound informed when I give them a call. What do you think is the single most important skill required for the position? So if you look at this, once again, I did the same thing. I said, okay, that's not a problem. So I agreed with the objection. I got underneath it, so to speak. I said, before I do, can I ask you a question about the position so that I sound informed when I give them a call? This is pretty much what I said every time, you know, when I was working a desk full time. And it works probably 70% of the time, I would say. Because it's kind of like a, sure, no problem. Here's one more thing. And then you're just talking again, right? You're just back talking in the same exact conversation you were having a minute ago. Or you can try option two. Once again, that's not a problem. Happy to do that. I'm wondering if it would make sense to three-way call the HR person right now so that we can get details worked out and I can get started on the search for you. What are your thoughts? So once again, you want to work with people who want it to happen as much as you do. If this hiring authority really wants to work with you but his hands are tied, then maybe he's going to do some of the legwork or maybe he's open to you doing a three-way call right then. The other thing you can say is something similar to these two initial approaches and then say, look, here's the reality. You know, normally if I get pushed to HR, that means this isn't going to go anywhere. And that's, I'm not saying anything about you, but just the way it typically works is you and I will not talk again, and this is not going to happen. And the truth is, to attract top quality talent, they're going to need to know that I've talked to you. They're going to need to know that I understand the position, I can talk intelligently about who they would be working for, that I have some understanding of that. So what I would suggest is we take a couple of minutes for me to understand the position, what's important about it, and then I can send you an email that you can forward to HR that introduces me so that you don't have to do the work. So I will send you an email that you can forward to HR or use as a template to forward to HR. Right? So that's the third option. But it's just being real with them and saying this is probably going nowhere if we do that. So it depends on how important this position is to you. And that's the other way you could frame it, you know. What's the level of urgency associated with this position? And if it's super high and super important, then just be real. Say, look, we both know if I go through HR, they don't know who I am. They don't really have an incentive to work with me. It's probably not going to go anywhere. So if this is urgent and important to you, why don't we get some of the important work taken care of right now, and then we'll figure out how to get HR involved. What are your thoughts? Right? And again, this isn't going to work 100% of the time. You're just trying to be real with them, and it depends on how they respond. But if they have a positive response, or if you get, let's say you do this, you know, 1,000 times over the course of a year, and you get 1, 2, 3, or 4 questions further than your competitors do, right? So you stay on the phone for an extra 4 minutes over time. But you do that 1,000 times, that is going to make a tremendous difference to your success in the business. So we're just trying to keep the door open and trying to crack more light in through the door And if you do this consistently, you're going to have a lot more success. Let's look at a couple of more comments you might get. Okay, we're happy with the firm we already have, or you're not on the list. Right? If you get this response, let's just tackle it as we're happy with the firm we already have. There's a response that you can use that goes like this. Okay, that's not a problem. Can I ask you a question about the firm that you're happy with? On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank them in terms of your satisfaction? And if they come back and they say, I would rank them a 7, your next question is, can I ask you what reason they're not an 8? Can I ask you what reason they are not an 8? And then whatever the, let me just make sure I'm on the right slide here, and there we go. Whatever the reason they give for why they're not happy with that firm, that is your crack of light. That is your opportunity to address their dissatisfaction. And the way you can do that is just by asking, can I ask you what reason they're not an 8? Can I ask you what reason they are not an 8? And whatever their answer is, because they're going to have to say something, you can sell a solution to whatever that difference is between 7 and 10. Okay, that's the crack of light that you have there. Again, that's not going to work every time, but it is something you can say when you hear that response. The other thing to think about, the one that I kind of prefer that I have used with a lot of success, is to just say, let's say it's a position where you have a candidate and they tell you you're not on our vendor list. You know, we're not adding any new vendors. You could say, I don't want to be on your vendor list. I respect the fact that you have a vendor list and that I'm not on it. That's perfectly fine. And I understand you're not looking to add anyone to it. But before we wrap up, I had a thought. If this candidate that I've called you about could solve a need that you have right now, we could put together a one-time agreement in place just for this search. That way you're still not adding us to your vendor list, but you're also not limiting your talent pool. You know, what are your thoughts about that? That has worked for me a lot over the years when it looked like there was no crack of light. So you're agreeing with their objection once again. You're telling them you don't want to be on their vendor list because you respect it, and you're offering them a solution, which is a one-time agreement, a limited agreement. And this works very well, depending on if you're talking to someone who has the authority to do that, right? If they have the authority to go, oh, well, that kind of makes sense. We're not really adding them to the vendor list. And if you have a candidate that they want, then this can work really, really well. So make sure you have that. That's a puppy dog close, right? You guys all know the puppy dog close you probably learned your first day in sales. It actually is a great technique both in personal and professional life, right? Is to give them something easy to do, like take the puppy home, try it out, and there's no obligation. And then, of course, there's a high probability that they're going to want to keep that puppy, because you gave them the opportunity to test it out. Let's talk about one more, and then we're getting close to the top of the hour. I'll open it up to Q&A if we have it. Otherwise, we will wrap up pretty soon and then move to tomorrow, wrapping up the rest of the topics. All right, so the last one here, we have no openings. We have no openings. So, you know, for this, there is a there's no magic answer. If you really have no openings, then they have no openings. But you want to have a way to be able to work with them even though they have no openings, right? And at least to start the dialogue to be able to do that. And so one way you could pivot that is to say, we don't just work with companies who have open slots. There's actually another way that we might be able to help you. And then you would pivot to the permission marketing script. Many clients use us as talent scouts to keep them informed of the best programmers as they become available in the marketplace. And the truth is, you and I both know that they may not be available. If someone becomes available, they may not be available when you happen to have an opening. And so we can send you a periodic email letting you know when the top 20% in the field are available. What are your thoughts? So the reason that's an evergreen approach is because it's always relevant, right? That's the idea. It's always relevant. And it gives you something to pivot to when somebody says, we have no openings. And once again, if they say to you, yeah, sure, you can send me an email, you now immediately pivot to, great, so that I don't waste your time, can you give me a thumbnail sketch of the types of people you have the most difficulty in locating? And then maybe they say, well, when we have this type of programmer, we really need blah, blah, blah. And off you're running. You're improvising, right? That came off of someone saying, we have no openings. And you had a way to pivot it to something that felt natural. It didn't feel coercive. And it was like a slippery slide that just went down to that question. And here you are, off in a conversation. The last thing I want to cover with you today is to ask, where does it hurt? And I think we may have looked at this one a little earlier. Where does it hurt question? I understand you don't have an opening at the moment, but before we hang up, I just wanted to ask you, what is typically the most difficult position for you to fill? So that could either come off of, organically off of the permission marketing approach, or you could just use that when somebody says, we have no openings, right? Either one of those is a way to respond. So in terms of the content for today, that's how far we're going to get for today with the material. I just want to recap a little bit what we covered, and then I'll open it up for Q&A if we have some questions. Actually, let me check in. Ariana, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. And Ariana has a cold, everyone, so she might sound a little rough, but she's been a trooper. So do we have questions in the queue, or what is that looking like?
We do have a few.
Okay. All right. So I'll do a recap, and then we'll get to some of those, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay.
Okay. So what I started off talking about was the idea that researchers are able to predict the outcome of telephone sales calls. They also did business plan pitches and a couple of other, I think, venture capital pitches with 87% accuracy without listening to a single word content, right? So that tells us that there's something else, there's a subtext, a nonverbal subtext happening. And I told you that that is going to be your comfort level, your confidence with what you're presenting. And part of the way that you can get comfortable is by adopting language that you believe in, right? So you're getting in alignment with what it is that you're pitching. And so that's why we went through, how do you soften the conversation in the beginning? Do you say something like a softener that I mentioned? My job here isn't to convert you to get you to work with us today or to, find out if you have any current openings. I wanted to find out if we could be of service either now or in the future, right? And I went through a couple of softeners that you can use for that. And the purpose of it really is just to get them understanding that you work a little bit differently. And part of that comes from your intention, as I mentioned, your goal with the outcome of those calls. So the end objective isn't to get a job order. It's to get to the truth as to whether or not it is in their interest to work with you early in the process. And I talked about some ways that you can do that. One of those was just to say we may or may not be the right firm to help you. But if we take 5 minutes together, we can start to figure that out, right? We talked about permission marketing, the idea of the pink spoon, which is getting a sample of ice cream, something easy to say yes to. And the example that I would suggest for you is the permission marketing script. The easy yes that you're going for is, would you like to receive a periodic email letting you know when the best attorneys become available in your area? And by the way, this stuff can be applied whether you do it via email or via a phone call first. And I'll talk a little more about that tomorrow. But I don't care if you use email first, social media first, a telegram, a letter, whatever the case. As long as you get to the point, what we really talked about today is when you get to the point of having a conversation with someone, what do you actually do, right? But there's a lot of ways you could get there. I talked about the option script, which is the one that I said to me is probably the most straightforward and honest. I'd like to support your career in one of two ways. Right? When the time is right, I can help you to find a stronger position for yourself, or I can help you to recruit talented people for your team. And I mentioned that both of those methods are evergreen, require zero prep, and therefore they're less, they're going to usually involve less resistance for you in terms of failure-proofing your own behavior, making sure that you actually follow through on them. And then we talked about some objections, specific objections to common things you're going to hear and how to respond to those. All right, so that's it for today. If you need to hop off, there will be the recording available for today's session. And now, Ariana, if you just want to fire away with some, or let me just see here. Where's our recap? We talked about that. Okay. Here we go. All right. And just reinforce, you guys have the 30 days of the free roundtable membership. If you want to take advantage of that and you haven't yet, you can click the link on the webcast page to get all the details. All right. What do we have in terms of questions, Ariana?
Okay. So my screen just went blank. Okay, here it is. I'm sorry. Every time I click it, it disappears. So I'm just give me 1 second.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see if I can get to the. Okay. Jeff asked, what are some follow-ups or transitions to the option script you've seen be successful? This type of approaches seem to transition into a keep me aware recruiting call most of the time for me in the past. Do you need
follow-ups
me to read that?
Or transitions? I think I get it. Follow-ups meaning after the person says yes. So we didn't really talk about follow-up, and that's, Jeff, what I would say is think of these as if you were going to be swimming in a swimming pool, you have to get into the pool somehow, right? If you dive off the pool and you do a belly flop, you're in for a pretty bad swimming session. So the purpose of the option script is to give you a clean dive into the pool. Now, once you're in the pool, you're going to have to swim and freestyle and improvise, right? So whatever happens after that is your conversation with them. If you're able to agree to some type of follow-up, you know, what's a good amount of time for me to contact you? I didn't mention this, but this is a nice way to kind of end a conversation. What's a good amount of time for me to get back in touch with you? Where on the one hand, I'm not bugging you, but on the other hand, I'm not going to miss an opportunity to help you, right? So that might be the end of that phone call, and somebody says, oh, you can reach out to me in 4 weeks. And then you reach out to them in 4 weeks, and there's an evergreen follow-up script that I can give you that is one sentence. And actually, it was already included today. I just didn't call it a follow-up script. Follow-up is one of those things that people wonder, okay, I got permission to talk to this guy, and he seemed, we talked for 5 minutes. It wasn't like fireworks or anything. And he said, yeah, you can reach out to me in 6 weeks. I've done that now 2 months in a row. What am I supposed to say? Right? And the truth is, there are good things for you to do via videos and articles and all kinds of good reasons to provide value, which is the best thing. But if you're aware of the resistance that most people have, which is I've talked about a little bit today, then you want to have something that feels easy too and relevant, right? And that easy, relevant thing is, are there any types of talent you'd like me to keep an eye open for in the next 90 days? That could come via email or via phone. And if the answer to that is no, then you move on, right? If somebody says no to that question, then you pretty much move on. So the option script is just the dive into the pool. The rest of it is your follow-up, your improvising once you're in the pool. What else, Ariana?
Okay, Karen asks, we typically get engagement fees if we use the questions from 3C or 3D. How would you transition to charging an engagement fee? And then she says she was thinking, she describes what she thinks she would do, but do you want me to read that part?
Yeah, sure.
I was thinking of this. Ask C, then ask, are there any current or upcoming critical openings that you need to make sure you have the best available talent. And she then says, love your classes, and you mentioned if you know something already. I'm not sure what that means.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead and answer the question.
Okay. So this is a great question. Is if you're doing retained work or engagement fees, does this stuff work in the same way? There's going to be nuances that you would probably change in how you frame this stuff. But one thing that I found very surprising, I switched in my career, I switched from contingency to retained after about four years probably. And what you hear usually is that retained firms don't do this, you know, or they don't market this way. In actual practice, what I have found is most retained firms do some version of candidate marketing. They don't call it candidate marketing. It wouldn't sound the same way, but they do a version of it. It's just more of a high-level introduction, you might call it, right? So that's just – there are nuances here that what I think trips people up when they're thinking about, well, I do retain, so how am I going to do this, is let me give you one example. I know of a retained firm, extremely successful, who just, they came from a contingency background, and when they switched to retain, what they had known in contingency was marketing candidates. So they said, well, we're still going to market candidates. So they would just call companies in the exact same way, market a candidate, and then when the prospect said, yeah, interesting, send over the resume, they would say, great, well, let's get a retainer in place. And then they would just pivot to the retainer conversation. And they were extremely successful, and I know other firms who did that as well. I didn't really pitch candidates when I switched to retain search so much. I did more of the high-level introduction, kind of whispering in the ear instead of barking, I guess you might say. But the point is that you can do a version of this even if you're doing engagement. Some of the wording or the approach you might change a little bit, but are there any types of talent you'd like me to keep an eye open for the next 90 days? Remember, retained is just how you're paid, right? It's how you invoice. There's more difference, but in terms of the client's perspective, it's how you invoice them or when you invoice them specifically. So if you're asking good business questions, what criteria do you use when selecting a search partner? What are the top three criteria of your most successful employees? You know, some of the things that I've mentioned as far as questions, those are relevant either way. So I wouldn't personally get too hung up on that part of it. What else, Ariana?
Okay, Katie in Asheville asked, if someone agrees to receive a talent scout email, what do you end up sending them?
Oh, good question, Katie. So that would depend on your structure. Some companies have a list of people that they will send out. I should tell you that it helps a lot if you are in a very narrow niche, right? So if you recruit IT auditors in Seattle, then this is going to be easy and a great method where you could literally just send out a list every week of your top candidates via email, right? If you don't have that narrow of a niche, then it could be that you're going to send them an introduction email or a candidate marketing email when you have someone who's relevant. And one thing that I didn't mention that is really, really important is that when you have those conversations, the permission marketing approach, and you're asking, would you like to receive a periodic email, it is vital that you enter it into the database in a searchable way, that whatever their answer is. Because here's how it's really going to play out. You say that to them, right? They give you some list of, well, when you have a person with these criteria, I'd like to hear about them. If you can take that feedback they gave you and put it in your database in a way that 6 months from today, when you come across that candidate and you go, you know, there was somebody who told me that they were looking for a controller with this kind of background. I can't remember who that is. If I can go to my database, punch it in, and come up with, oh, yeah, it was this guy. He said that he would want to hear about that. Now I send him a targeted email saying, guess what, I just come across someone based on our conversation 6 months ago. I wanted to keep you informed. So it's really vital that you can database that information. And it may be that you don't send them anything for a couple months, right, because you're just telling them a periodic email letting you know when we think someone exceptional has come up that you should hear about. So the key thing is to track that information in a searchable way. And depending on your database, you might do that through a title code, keywords, et cetera. All right? What else, Ariana?
Darren in Cleveland asked, do you ever leave a voicemail?
Yes. Yes, I would suggest leaving a voicemail. That's a whole other conversation. There's a lot of variation on what kind of voicemail you might leave. I tend to go with either very mysterious or very detailed, right? So kind of one of the two. And the very detailed would be that I already kind of know what they're looking for, and I think I have something that's a solution. And then there's a hybrid. There's one person in our program, I think, if you guys have the Roundtable membership, you can look up an audio interview with a guy named Michael Pietrak, P-I-E-T-R-A-C-K. He leaves a message where he says both things, kind of like the option script. He would say, you know, I'm calling you for two reasons on their voicemail. Calling you today for two reasons. Number one is I had a chance to evaluate someone who I thought was exceptional with this, this, and this skills. And number two, we also work with people who do exactly what you do, and I wanted to find out a little bit more about your career. Not sure if either one of those are relevant, but please do give me a call back so we can discuss. So that's kind of that, what I've been trying to get at with you guys when I said tell the truth, be honest, be natural, be authentic, get lined up with the reasons you're doing something. Once, when you have that straight, then it kind of flows out of you like, hey, look, there's two ways I might be able to help you. One, we've got this exceptional person. Two, I work with people like you, you know, so let's talk. That's the idea. That would be a more heavy on the detail one. The more mysterious one would sound something like this. You know, hi, this is Gary Stauvel. It's 9 o'clock on Tuesday. I'm an executive recruiter. I'll be at my desk until 3. If you could give me a call before then, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Click. So I call that a mysterious message. It's not too mysterious because I did say I'm an executive recruiter, but I didn't really give any information. Right? So I would go one of those two polls. Anything else, Ari?
No other questions, but one of our attendees had some audio issues, so I just want to remind everyone you have access to the audio replay using the same link that you did for the live.
Yeah, and if it was one person, it's probably on your end with connectivity. Otherwise, we would have gotten a flood of comments. So, again, I just want to remind you guys, if you have any audio issues during tomorrow's call, just hit refresh, and what that'll do is catch you up to the live feed. Okay, but if you do have technical issues, just send an email to info@therecruitinglab.com, and we'll try to help you out. Wow, look at that. It is literally 11:15 on the dot. Boy, that almost never happens. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining today. I know it's hard to pull yourself off the phone for 75 minutes. I would love to hear your feedback. Just send it to info@therecruitinglab.com. That's our main mailbox. Or if you have some comments for me about pluses or minuses of what you thought of the content, shoot me an email directly to gary@therecruitinglab.com. Otherwise, we're back tomorrow at 9 o'clock Pacific, 12 o'clock Eastern, which again is 1 hour earlier. All right, I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.